If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one divine life. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Our seminar topic this evening is the Order of Excalibur and Cultivating Heart Seership. So let's begin with an attunement. Take a deep breath and call yourself forward from your multidimensional levels of divine isness and beingness, and close your multidimensional essence all the way down into your physical body mind, and allow that greater overlay to integrate and align itself so there's a clear flow of seeing, knowing, and being from your divine source and spirit, multidimensionally, all the way down into your physical human personality and presentation. And allow yourself to create a place and a space now, if you wish, to be activated and initiated into a greater level of seership. This work is sponsored through the Office of the Christ, the Order of Melchizedek, and in particular, the Order of Excalibur, which has to do with our cooperation with the Devic elemental lives that ensoul nature and that are becoming increasingly visible into our physical dimension as we and the Earth morph into that higher dimensional overlay and point of view and manifestation that we've called the New Earth, or Terra Christa. With every shift of consciousness, there is, at the same time, a different way of seeing that begins to operate through us. Bear in mind that we don't actually see through our eyes. Those are simply focusing lenses. But we actually see from that which is behind the eyes that we could call the consciousness. And so consciousness is what actually sees. And so it is always with consciousness that we are working. Many of us, I believe, can trace our incarnational progression through the David kingdoms of nature. Likewise, many of us have been druids, shamans, medicine men and women. Many of us have and are still healers, herbalists, energy workers. Many of us are seers, visionaries, mystics, and regard nature as sacred. It's interesting that as consciousness flows through the different lineages and presentations of life, it inhabits forms in each of the kingdoms of nature: earth, fire, water, air, and ether, so that the consciousness itself is unfolding. And as it experientially unfolds, it adopts and appropriates higher forms. Each of these appropriations of forms falls under the ordering of one of the seven rays of manifestation. which enables consciousness to pass through a full prism of experience. And that's how consciousness expands. And we can attune to the particular essence of the elementals that we have, let's say, passed through more easily. For example, I found it fascinating when I was studying the Agni Yoga series of books that the Master Maurya and the Lords of Shambhala had given through Helena Rorick. And her master, the Master M, who's also her twin flame, said something very interesting about Helena Rorick. He said that she had taken very rare embodiments as the spirit of a lily and the spirit of a rose. Of course, this was eons back in time. We're not speaking of recent embodiments or incarnations by any stretch of the imagination. These are like billions of years ago in the unfoldment of the one we now know as Helena Rorick. But Helena Rorick had such an unusual sensitivity to energy and to consciousness that the Great White Brotherhood, the Trans-Himalayan Adepts, referred to her as their White Tara and as the mother of Agni Yoga. And Agni Yoga is the yoga of fiery synthesis that will govern the next root race. So she was a pioneering forerunner of being able to work more consciously, multidimensionally, and with, let's say, those upline streams of consciousness, which when you see clearly, you will find that they are your own embodiments. This is the big aha. Now you think you have separate masters and separate angels and separate spirit guides and otherness out there. But as you awaken to yourself as a God being, you find that you are all of those. These are your own incarnations. These are your own presentations. So you discover yourself in the David kingdom, the angelic kingdom, the nature kingdoms, the kingdoms of the great lords of light, the great cosmic beings, all of them. And you begin to realize there's only one life being lived here in a myriad of expressions. Now, we are currently moving into a more expanded understanding and view of life. And with this, our ability to see and sense beyond the third dimension is rapidly increasing. We're developing a higher level of physical vision that's been referred to as etheric vision. We are learning to see through, beyond, over, and around the physically apparent. Now, in the area of technology, if you observe, you'll find that technology tends to replicate or mirror our level of awareness, our meaning the collective consciousness of humanity. We now have cameras and other forms of technology that can capture higher dimensional imagery, an apparatus to detect auras, and energy forms. And the Heart Math Institute has even developed a way to tell when you are in heart coherency. It can actually replicate the waveform, for example, of rain, and send it forth as an energy which then begins to clear the pollution out of the atmosphere. My beloved friend Drinvalo Melchizedek has done many experiments with this apparatus, this rain waveform, and many other things. And we could call someone like Drinvalo really a spiritual scientist of consciousness, and the technology which then extends it out into our ability to use it, to enhance our environment. There is no level of pollution anywhere on our planet that cannot be cleared very quickly and very easily with these waveform thought form sendings, which, because we're in the age of Aquarius, are consciousness and air element driven, so that we don't have to do it the old way, the hard way. We have these communicative extensions of our own consciousness now in technology, through the internet, through these heart math inventions, through the understanding that we have that everything is energy. Everything is consciousness. Everything comes on a wavelength, a frequency. And we are beginning to explore more and more the psychological and biological ramifications of matching and duplicating frequency that we wish to insert into the time-space continuum to ameliorate life. So we're in the cutting edge of just jaw-dropping technology, which has been called the technology of light, which has nothing to do with the mental nuts and bolts forms of technology that we've used in the past. This is the technology of higher consciousness. And so tonight, as we work with the Order of Melchizedek, in very specifically the Order of Excalibur, we're going to be allowing and asking and requesting, if it's for our highest good, that each one of us be worked with in a way that will best serve each person listening in fine-tuning and attuning more precisely with what would be your next step of learning to see through the eyes of your heart. We are cultivating heart seership because it is the heart that we must present as a frequency of life to enter and to see these higher dimensional lovelies that would like to display in our reality. So the very space surrounding us at this very moment is filled with sights and sounds and teeming with other life forms, which we have only a limited ability to perceive. It's said that we see less than 10% of the electromagnetic spectrum and also use less than 10% of our brain's capacity. Why is that? Well, because we've only been functioning out of an ego mind-driven level of awareness, and the 90% is for our spirit to use. It is for the spirit part of us to operate in. So you might say the 10% level is the physical and the 90% is the immaterial or other dimensional aspects of our receivership and seership. So as humanity and the Earth begin to morph into higher dimensional manifestation as the new Earth or Terra Crista, we're beginning to see into this next dimension of life. And this is why we are seeing and able to capture and photographing and filming the orbs and light manifestations, UFOs, disincarnate spirits, and other phenomena and interdimensional beings and light forms. That's why we're seeing unicorns and Nessie, the Loch Ness so-called monster, which also has been found, the same species, in other lakes throughout the world, including Lake Champlain here in the United States, and other dimensional beings, Bigfoot, for example. There are many beings that are now coming into this level that we are actually able to see. Not to mention the lower astral entities like Chupacabra and things of that nature, which we don't need to go into. But yes, there's a dark side to nature in which those things that we have termed demonic or darker manifestations do appear in, but you won't have anything to do with them unless you vibrate in resonance with that level. And of course, like attracts like, and then you will see those things. But if you keep your vibrations in the divine spectrum and see through the eyes of the heart, you'll only see that which is through the divine, through the higher consciousness. And that is exceedingly beautiful and lovely and uplifting. So these have been there all along, but only now more people are able to see them for the first time. And this is part of our movement into the next dimension or ascension. So the rule of vision is very simple. We will see only what we truly want to see. We will see only what we believe we will see. And we will see only what we're looking for. So at every point, we are the ones that decide what it is that shows up in our vision. This applies to your inner vision and your so-called outer vision, which is actually one and the same thing. So this is, this requires our very open expectancy. That's the state that enables us to see beyond the dense physical plane. You expect to see, and you look through the eyes of innocence and love, and whatever it is you're looking at, if you look at it with the purity of your heart, will reveal its innermost essence to you, and moreover, will commune with you. You can go out someday with your notebook and sit down and talk to the tree deva, or talk to the squirrel, or the bird, or whomever you want to talk. I had a fascinating experience talking to the grass devas one day. I was thinking in my human judgment that they were upset because the grass was being cut. But when I looked clairvoyantly, I saw they had no judgment whatsoever about the action of being mowed by the lawnmower. They were just enjoying the different state of consciousness that it was offering to them. So you'll find that nature doesn't have that ego mind which judges and sees things in terms of right and wrong and good and bad and so forth. It's a very neutral, very openly accepting level of consciousness. And that's what we need to what should we say, imitate, fake it till you make it, until we can become more innocent in how we view each other and ourselves and life. So what we're speaking about here is normal physical vision, not clairvoyance per se, but more the ability to see, again, what has been called the upper vision or the eyes of the heart. Now, the very first experience that everyone reports upon having any kind of awakening epiphany or altered state of consciousness is that suddenly they see things differently. And so again, it's important to remember that any shift in consciousness will alter your vision. That's how you can tell you've had an authentic breakthrough in consciousness, is that suddenly you see in a way that you didn't see before. So bear in mind that we see through our higher awareness or inner state of consciousness more than with our actual eyes. And even those who are born, for example, blind, they still see just with an inward form of seership. So the new kids coming in, well, that have been coming in, let's say, since the 80s, can see with different parts of their body. They can see with their elbows, their knees, the balls of their feet, their hands, their ears, the sides of their face, their foreheads. Quite literally, they can see through any part of their body. Why is that? Well, because everything in nature replicates the atom. And in the center of the atom is the photon, a point of light. What is that point of light? It is the Christ. So the Christ, the Son of God, the Beloved, the Light, the very light of divine consciousness itself, is resident as and within each cell, each atom. And so, naturally, that's the part that sees. We don't see through our eyes, we see through the light. We see through the light of the Christ within us, which is the divine consciousness of awareness itself. So that is what sees, and that's why we can see, and we can be in our totality within every tiny fractal, every tiny aspect, or facet of the hologram, where the whole is contained in every facet. That's what hologram means. And so we are holographic beings, as I mentioned when we first began, that when you deeply realize your divinity, you will awaken as everyone and everything. You will no longer just think that you're this singular body, mind, personality, and point of view bearing the name that you have in this lifetime. That illusion will vanish into omnipresence. That illusion will vanish into omnipresence. So that's why nothing is more important for anyone to do at this time than learning how to stay centered in the heart, in childlike openness, innocence, and awe. The child simply accepts that which is, having no preconceived ideas about it whatsoever, and no judgment. So, obviously, what blocks this higher childlike innocence and awareness, primarily what blocks it for most people, is our attachment and recalling of past hurts and traumas. Our focusing upon the past and what was done to us, or what we imagined was done to us, or what we did, prevents us from being present here and now. And you cannot see clearly through the eyes of grievance. So think of your heart as your viewing lens through which you see into the higher dimensions of divine life. Your heart must be clean and clear to be able to see clearly, like Jesus taught in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. He didn't mean a God separate up on a cloud somewhere in the sky. He meant that you will see the good and the divine everywhere you look. He won't see anything else. You will see the love that is. So unresolved, unhealed emotional issues, unforgiveness, things you are holding against yourself or others, guilt, resentment, envy, anger, all of these will cloud and dirty your viewing lens, making clear vision impossible. Likewise, a cluttered, preoccupied, overly analytical mind will also block clear receivership and vision. Therefore, you're not able to see or receive any higher impressions of life beyond the third dimension. So if you feel like you are blocked in being able to see into the higher levels, check those areas I've just mentioned and see where you need to do some clearing. And primarily the clearing is forgiving yourself for forgetting that you are divine. And so is everyone else. But start by asking yourself, am I harboring emotional pain, hatred, or grievance, or any kind of negativity on any level towards anyone about anything. A Course in Miracles has a lesson entitled, "My grievances hide the light of the world that I am." So to see through higher vision requires your first seeing yourself, and thus others, as innocent and divine. So don't think that you can set yourself up as one who critiques and points out the wrongs in others or in the world and still be a true seer. Judging and true seeing can never occupy the same space. So the minute you've made another person wrong and condemned them, you have likewise condemned yourself and blocked your own vision. Course in Miracles states that the ego is ever on the lookout for the wrongdoings of other egos. So ego sees ego just as the Christ beholds the Christ. Therefore, if you're really interested in seeing, just give your vision to Christ and ask whatever and whomever you need to forgive to be revealed to you. And as each face and incident is coming up to your awareness, as it will if you ask, forgive each one by forgiving yourself for judging yourself for that, whatever it is that you have judged in another or in the world. At any time you judge, it's because you have projected your own guilt upon that other person or that situation. That's all. You've objectified your own self-indictment, your own guilt, for what in highest truth you never did. Because in highest truth you've never left original innocence and your oneness with God. So it's always as you see yourself that you see others. And it is always yourself you are judging as well as yourself that you're forgiving. And in forgiving, you are forgiven and set yourself free. So forgive yourself each time for forgetting that you are divine. And use this process to step free through grace. Otherwise, you will remain stuck under the law of karma. And the law of karma is inexorable in the sense that it will relentlessly require you to repay in like degree and measure whatever you have done to another. And that, my friends, is the slow boat to China, and entirely unnecessary. The Christ action has been gifted to this planet 2,000 years ago so that we could, through the atoning action of the Christ, step free through grace. And when you do that, you are able to save time because you don't have to go through all of those cycles of lifetimes to work out your karma, which is virtually impossible the way the law has been set up. That's why the Christ had to come, because the law was not working. It was keeping people in that reincarnational cycle forever and ever and ever. And the Lord of the negative realms was not permitting souls to progress into the higher levels. We were earthbound, so to speak, since the fall in Atlantis. So that's why the Christ action was instituted on the planet, to be able to enable us to step free through grace and not to have to go through endless cycles of reincarnation and karma. So bottom line, give it to love. Offer it all up to love. Yield, surrender, lay it all down at the altar or at the feet of Christ and step free through his loving grace. That's the smart way and the easy way. There's always an easy way and a hard way. So let me ask you, are you starting to see beyond your previous ability levels? Do you see or sense devic elementals or angels? We're going to be learning to operate in coordinated endeavor with the elemental kingdom because that's the way the ancients lived. That's why the ancients didn't pollute. For example, the aboriginal races upon the planet, they can live for thousands of years on the same plot of land and leave it better than when they found it. How did they do that? They lived in complete harmony with their environment. So we have to relearn how to co-live and co-share the planet with beings and elemental spirits that before, with the dawning of the mental principle in humanity, we're that race that is mind-dominated now, we have to relearn how to live in harmony with Earth and with the elementals of nature. And the order of Melchizedek, the aspect of the order of Melchizedek, the division, let's say, that governs that training is called the Excalibur lineage. And yes, it works with the Merlin, it works with Count Saint Germain, it works with many of the levels and masters and orders and lineages that are extremely familiar to many of you. And it's really fun because, well, for example, I think the very first experiment was done by the Findhorn community in Scotland, which I had the joy of visiting back in the early 90s. And there was a man and his wife, Eileen and Peter Caddy, I believe their names were, and their friend, I believe her name was Irene, or Eileen, and also David Spangler. And all of them were working to create what turned out to be the most extraordinary garden that grew the most immense fruits and vegetables out of what had been a garbage dump, just a gravel pile where people threw their refuge. And under the guidance of the Devic elementals, which told them exactly what to do and how to do it, they were guided to create this community, which I believe was the very, very first New Age, quote-quote, community of its kind on the planet. This is way, way, way back. And there's a wonderful book called The Findhorn Garden that describes how they worked with the elementals and how they were taught. It's just delightful reading. And then there's another group called Perilandra, which also did a similar work in coordinating, cooperating with the Devic elementals. And those are only two of many today. Today there are many, many, I think, groups that are focused in working in cooperation with the Devic and elemental kingdoms. And maybe some of you listening are involved with this. And it's fun and it's delightful. And that's what we need to do. For example, in India, they would never think of, for example, plowing their fields, which they use in many cases oxen to do, until the oxen and their plow and the field and their seeds had all been blessed and consecrated, and they had evoked the elemental spirits to coordinate and cooperate with them. And this is what they do in India. They have a way of working in harmony with their environment and with nature. And we're doing very well until, you know, the English came around and started trying to get them to do things the hard way. But fortunately, in South India, where I spent most of my time, life, at least up until about 10 years ago, was virtually unchanged, in those villages for century after century. And you begin to see how simply people live and how happily and how comfortably. And you'll see that same thing in Africa and in other places, which many Westerners consider to be very primitive. But if you go there and live and observe how people live when they're left alone and not, you know, colonized and Christianized and brainwashed into doubting the authenticity of their indigenous culture, when you really see them, in their natural state. They don't have disease. They don't have the teeth, tooth and gum diseases. They don't have cancer. They don't have any of those things that plague modern man. So again, it's learning to live in our natural, normal state. We're not living natural, normal lives now, and that's why we are self-eliminating ourselves and shortening our lives through creating diseases that are indicative of our attack upon each other, upon the earth, and upon our own lives. So that's the danger of having a civilization that is governed by the mind rather than the heart. But everything works together, ultimately, for the good. And this is just an interim of appropriation where we're learning to attune to the divine mind and learn to allow the mind that was in Christ Jesus to be quickened and activated in our mind so that we function in perfect harmony with the will of the Father, Mother, God, and with all of the elements of creation. We will not be forsaken. We will not be lost. We will not be left to be loose cannons in this world. We will not be allowed to destroy the earth. We will not come to harm because we're like two-year-old children playing with firearms. You can't leave a child alone and unattended to play with firearms. So likewise, the governors and the guardians of our evolution, the ladies, the lords and ladies of the Trans-Himalayan Brotherhood, the great avatars and masters, are supervising and overlooking the matriculation and evolution of human consciousness. So not to worry, don't be afraid, just be humble. Be humble and teachable and sweet. Stay humble, stay innocent, stay sweet. And when you think you know something, get over it. We don't know anything. We see but through a glass darkly. But one day we will see and be seen as we truly are, as the Christ of God, the uniquely begotten love of God. So, in your training, we each have, I would say, a very unique way of perceiving, attuning to, and interacting with other dimensional life. We could use seeing, which could be inwardly through visions, inner impressions, dreams, out-of-body experiences, or with your eyes wide open, with your normal, everyday vision. So let me ask you, are you seeing more paranormally now than before? And how is your multidimensional seership manifesting to you? And, you know, we each tune into and contact these other more refined planes of existence in ways that match our consciousness, our natural and normal ways of being. That's why you never have to import a technique or an approach that feels uncomfortable to you. We are doing sahaja. We're doing the natural way to God. Sahaja yoga is natural, the natural yoga, the natural way to be union, in union with God. So it's not the same, and there really is no right or wrong way to tune in. We simply need to be more attentive and allowing of our way of doing this to simply present itself to us. It presents. Everything divine presents because it's already ours. We don't have to mood make or to effort to have what is already ours. We just have to get out of the way and quit stressing about it and let it, you know, let it be. For example, some people really see more through their actual physical eyes than others. I would say because they have made a practice of operating more from conscious spiritual awareness, and thus they that's, you know, evident in their everyday life. Others may see more mentally through inner imagery or receiving transmissions that appear as geometric symbols or grids or visionary templates in their third eye area. Some will hear sounds that translate later into awareness or drop into their awareness as information that suddenly they just simply know. And the need for thought is therefore transcended by a process of sonar transmission and receptivity. This is how the really higher ultra-terrestrial other dimensional beings operate, through sonar transmissions and pictograms of light. They don't use words. So those then become translated by the individual as it passes through the lower mind, and then usually it gets distorted. So the best way is to be soul-infused so that it goes from soul to soul and comes out as clear spiritual awareness. It doesn't get contaminated with the ego mind that always has to do something complicated with that which is of the utmost simplicity. So how do you see or hear or sense beyond the usual human range? Some people are more kinesthetic and tend to sense and feel energy fluctuations. Maybe they experience tingles on their head or up their spine, or goosebumps, or sensations of heat or cold or trembling. Some experience kriya jolts. Kriya is a movement of energy through the neurological system, clearing blocks. Where there's a block, very often there'll be like a jolt of energy as that block is cleared, and the energy, which is very much like electricity, flows through the circuitry of your nervous system, which has a corollary in your etheric body as well. So when you have a kriya jolt, you'll have often you'll experience a sudden jolt of energy. Or sometimes people will feel a twitch. Sometimes when people are receiving, their eyes will twitch, or there'll be a twitch somewhere in the body that signifies the nervous system intaking an unusual energy. Sometimes when you receive an energy that's very unfamiliar to you, you'll get the flutters in your solar plexus. And sometimes it'll shake you so hard in your solar plexus that you feel like your teeth are chattering. And sometimes your teeth are chattering. And that's when a very uncommon, unfamiliar energy is impacting you in the solar plexus. Sometimes that will happen in your throat, and your throat will go into a form of constriction. Some people, their bodies will rock back and forth, or if they're standing, they'll sway backward and forward. We saw a lot of that happening during the Brazo gazing. My body was going back and forth and back and forth. Some people, when the divine spirit comes upon them, they'll start to, their hands will flutter, or their whole body will tremble and shake. And, or some other energy manifestation is detected. It's said that the Holy Spirit never shows up without some form of effect on the physical body. Although the Holy Spirit is invisible, the effects of the entrance and overlighting and anointing of the Holy Spirit is always detectable and obvious. And it always shifts your consciousness into a divine state. Always, always, always. So while others may suddenly receive insight or direct knowledge of things that they had no way of knowing, sometimes that energy increment will represent itself as prophetic insight, which simply dawns in your awareness. And sometimes the words will flow forth at that same time in a prophetic foretelling of events or other form of revelation. That's how God speaks through revelation. So each person is designed to host, express, and convey the divine spirit in a unique manner. And it's our task to study and observe ourselves and to know how we operate. You know, the old saying, that is the first lesson we learn in any of the mystery schools during our nightly travels, is man, know thyself, for it is in knowing thyself that all else is known. And, of course, the second lesson is to thine own self be true, because then you can be false to no one. So how much of the higher dimensions are you aware of right now? Do you see colors or light around people or objects, around trees or mountains or other forms of light manifestation? Do you see flashes and glimmers or appearances in your peripheral vision, that is to say, out of the corner of your eyes? So you will learn to see spirit obliquely and indirectly. If you look too forcibly or too directly, you will stop seeing the vision. So you have to kind of go real soft in your vision. You know, don't look hard. Just let your eyesight go soft. And let your eyes cross ever so slightly. And just kind of look very gently. Now, kind of askance. And that's when, if you just stay very calm and centered, you begin to see into those other dimensions. So do you see colors in your third eye, or flashes, or rings of light? Or, for example, an eye appear in your third eye when you have your eyes closed? That's indicative of the opening of the third eye and the strengthening of your connection with spirit. Some people see a steady sun, and that means that you have moved your awareness into a solid connection with that higher level of yourself. Do you receive a sudden sense of the presence of other higher dimensional beings around you? Do you sense or see angels, masters, spiritual guides, or other Devic life forms? You know, they have the fairies, trolls, hobbits, sylphs, so the spirits of the air, naiads, the spirits of the water, the mer kingdom. Yes, there really are mermaids and mermen. All of these things that are portrayed in the, you know, Walt Disney has in his movies, they actually exist. In fact, he was a Devic prince, Walt Disney, and his mission was to open our awareness to the Devic kingdom. That's why he made all those enchantingly beautiful, basically mystery school lessons in the form of stories, like Sleeping Beauty, and all of those are spiritual teachings. So when you're in nature, do you sense the many elemental lives that operate throughout nature? And when and at what age or time in your life did you first notice that you could see beyond the usual physical dimensions of life? Did you, for example, have a so-called invisible playmate as a child? Did you ever have a prophetic dream that later came true? And another thing that's interesting is that gifts often function along, they're hereditary. For example, were there other mystics or seers in your family? I come from a family of Irish and Scottish mystics. So all of the women in my whole family were prophetic and dreamt prophetic dreams and were mystics and seers. And everyone in my father's line was in the line of ministry or the military or were literary authors and statesmen. So there's that lineage on both sides of my family that comes forward very much in me. And I think if you study your lineage in just this lifetime alone, you may find that there are gifts that have been passed down. And you know, you may not even be aware of them. And that's not to say that that limits you anyway. So where and when do you feel the greatest sense of God's presence or the presence of greater connectedness to the all that is? How do you feel when you're especially connected and attuned to that greater life and presence? In other words, where is your happy place? Where is your happy place? What thoughts uplift and inspire you? You know, you use these things until you can move in and occupy and just stay there. But you have to kind of work yourself into that initially until it becomes, you know, second nature. Or first nature, actually. You're moving back to your original state. So what do you do when you wish to shift your state of consciousness to a higher level? How do you redirect and manage your emotional state when you're tempted to give in to some negative expression, say anger or resentment or envy or depression or some addictive pattern? What do you do to manage yourself? What skills have you developed in taking charge and dominion over your life expression? This is something that we all are here to do, is to tame the beast, tame the wild horse here. Or the wild child, as the case may be. So have you discovered tools and consciousness keys that always work in redirecting and recentering your state of consciousness? I bet you found a lot of them that you haven't actually ever considered because nobody's been in your face or in your ear, as the case may be, like me tonight, asking you. Maybe you never thought to look. Well, here's your chance. So this is a practice of spiritual inner awareness, where you operate as an awake and aware disciple and initiate. You take responsibility for your state of consciousness. You don't just allow, you know, negative emotions or indulgence in negative thinking to take over your expression. So you learn to stay on top of your game. You monitor your expression and supervise the energies that you permit to flow through you. This is part of self-mastery. You know, it can't be given to you. You have to earn it, have to practice the consciousness keys until you mature into that higher level. So just consider any form of judging of yourself or another has a deadly poison, and avoid it at all costs. Even the slightest degree of judging is a deadly poison that will kill your connection to the higher levels. It's that deadly. So just avoid it at all costs. It won't ultimately destroy you, but my heavens, will it unnecessarily delay you and rob you of what could be yours right now. So there's no other way to enter the kingdom of heaven or that sacred heart space. You simply must give up judging, blaming, critiquing, slandering, and bad-mouthing from this moment onward. And whenever you forget and slip, you have 60 seconds to correct yourself before it is recorded as a karmic debt, which then you must repay. And that's the teaching of John Roger, my particular mentor and master. So today, you know, there are light workers out there that can be observed pointing fingers of blame. And they'll give all kinds of excuses for why they're doing that, that it's their mission to be whistleblowers or to bring these negative doings of others to the attention of others. But I ask you, did Jesus do that? No. Did he ever tell his disciples to do that? No. Jesus said to pray for those who mistreat you and to overcome evil with good. And Jesus demonstrated that by forgiving those who were trying to kill his body, who were nailing him to the cross. And he said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." And so if you consider negativity as a form of mental illness, it just kind of takes you over to where you lose sight of what you're doing and you begin to act like a psycho case, then you can forgive yourself and others who are basically mentally ill. And that's what Jesus saw. He didn't judge. He saw that the people didn't know what they were doing. They were crazed with ego madness. And that's why they behaved as they did. So it is by being the energy of goodness, of forgiveness, of peace, of loving goodwill, that we are exemplifying the Christ consciousness in this world. And you can be silent, and it's not even necessary to say or do anything, but just to be the Christ consciousness in your home, on the job, and in your arena of influence. Then you are truly a bearer of light. Everything in life is actually composed of three energies, and people don't realize that when they polarize good and evil, or positive and negative, that they're actually holding duality in place. So to emphasize either polarity is to call forth the opposite polarity, and then one is trapped in duality. So we need to find the third way, the middle way that the Buddha taught. And when you find the middle path, you found the way to transcend duality. And it is that place that enables us to slip between dimensions, between worlds, between planes of consciousness, between the bardos of entrapment. And that place between good and evil is the place of the neutral observer, the impersonal self, the witness self. And from that position, it's easy to see what's really going on. And from a very detached point of view, and the divine seership is that which heals and mediates any situation of potential conflict. So we become the oil over that, the bridge over the troubled waters. And that's really what we're here to be, is to bridge the troubled waters for humanity. And bridges are designed to be walked on. And bridges are meant to be spans between here and there and this and that. So again, you take that bridging position where you're in that in-between state, but you're also able to see both sides from your position in the middle. So you remain clear. And thus you can be the Christ consciousness in that situation and provide a means of bridging, mediation, and reconciliation as you simply stand steady. You become like the hermit in the tarot deck, standing on the mountain and bearing a lantern. And you stand upon that mountain of spiritual awareness and hold that light steady. And that is learning to work above the effect. That is how you work and co-partner with Christ to heal and restore sanity in this world. And you know, it's like this. It always takes two opposing sides to create conflict or war or any other fight or argument. If one of those parties stays silent and centered, then there's no opposing force to pray against. And the force of the opposition is therefore neutralized and must seek another opposing force in order to operate. I often thought if, you know, our young people would worldwide simply refuse to go to war, war would end. And if each one of us refused to enter into conflict or argumentation, we would begin to see violence radically decrease in the world. And, you know, the reward for this is the awareness of dimensions of life, more thrilling than you could ever imagine, just waiting for humanity to end their discord. And that's what awaits us if we just become like a little child, full of innocence, purity, and love. So let's go out chanting, Om Shanti, Shanti. Shanti. Om. peace.